Welcome to Acquire Connected, the podcast that is your compass in the world of data across environmental, social, and governance.
Welcome to the Acquire Connected podcast. This podcast features interviews with thought leaders and technology experts who are tackling data management challenges in the geoscientific, environmental, and social performance industries and their impacts on the Earth's resources, the natural environment, and communities around them. I'm Jamie Nobbs, your host for this podcast, and today we sit down with Stuart van der Water, Environmental Lead at Acquire, and Shay Dadia, Commercial Manager of Envirosys at Acquire. This episode, we're looking at emerging trends in environmental reporting following two streams of thought: the trends we're seeing in regulatory requirements for environmental reporting and the innovation of digital technologies in relation to how we manage and use environmental data to make confident business decisions. Let's get started.
Thank you both for joining us today. It's great to have you on here.
Thanks, Jamie. Good to be talking to you.
Just to get started, can you both introduce a bit about yourselves and tell us about your journey in the world of environmental management?
Yeah, sure. I'll kick it off. So, Stu van der Water. I've been in the space for a fairly long time now. I won't date myself too much by saying how long, but my position now is a value stream lead within the Acquire business. Really, it's like a general manager and strategic lead for all of our environmental products within Acquire. I guess our flagship product in that area, Envirosys, I've been involved with that for many years now. And really started my life as a developer with it. So a lot of the older stuff in there I probably had a hand in, but I also did support, sales, implementations, spent a lot of time driving around mine sites back in the day, which really gave me a crash course into environmental data management. So I've always been really passionate, not just in the coding side, but the data side too. And I guess in more recent times, really how we can use the data. But there's, as we'll talk about, there's a lot to think of with environmental data. So there isn't too much we haven't seen across the journey.
Yeah, right. And Shay Dadia, Commercial Manager for Envirosys. My background is quite diverse and varied. I didn't come from a tech background. Mine's more science-based. So I spent 12 years in ag research, R&D for state and federal government. So more on the sort of subject matter side of things. Spent 3 years in commercial lab services in the environmental testing space for a global services provider. And I guess leading then into the tech space, 10 years all up now, working with businesses across the resource sector, environmental information management. And I guess my role has been to help those customers and the new customers marry their requirements for environmental information management with tech solutions.
Thanks, guys. So in terms of environmental, social, and governance, I guess ESG is a buzzword we hear a lot about. It's becoming a focal point for investors and stakeholders. How are you seeing companies incorporate their ESG considerations into their environmental reporting? What role does data management play?
Yeah, look, you'd think a lot. The funny thing is that E probably stands more for emissions than environment, especially when companies are looking at decarbonisation targets is really dominating. So if you go to any conference or talk, that's really a key theme. And that's where you'll probably find a lot of the ESG talk in more of the accounting space. It might even be the responsibility of a CFO within a company more than the environment team. But we've seen sort of, large studies by the likes of EY really talk about water management being as one of the key risks, even before emissions and decarbonisation. So no doubt at the heart of that, the data management is very important to it. We are definitely trying to raise that awareness of E being more broader than just the emissions part, because there's so much to be thinking about. Really, that data management isn't a luxury anymore. It's a necessity, because people can't just be making claims around ESG without being able to effectively show their workings.
Yeah, and I think for me, we've seen our customers, heavily considering how their environmental reporting feeds into their ESG representation. And I guess they're leading the way in leveraging more robust practices around their data management. So, they're focusing on collecting that data, integrating that data, standardizing that data, and verifying that data, I guess, which all rolls into ensuring reliability and consistency of, that bigger picture ESG-related information. And I guess ultimately that then feeds into supporting sustainable decision-making and ultimately building trust with those customer stakeholders.
So you talk about, sustainability reporting. How important is that information to get it, say, like in real time?
Yeah, it's sort of funny because a lot of what we're thinking about with that sort of real-time ability to get that data, the reporting from a reporting perspective, that reporting is often most frequent quarterly, if not annually. So I guess in some ways it's not massively important, but if you get asked at any point in time how you're tracking towards those things, you need to be answer that question. I think from a real-time perspective, whether it comes to emissions and ESG data and sustainability data, it's more around the scenario modelling, because realistically it shouldn't be a question of reporting, it's a question of change. Because we're trying to decarbonize, we're trying to try new things and implement new technologies and processes and frameworks to reduce the footprint. So where we can model that data in real time, get feedback as quickly as possible to ensure if things are working or not, for me, that's where the real-time access to data has most strategic value.
At a more technology level, being able to leverage the sensor technologies and IoT devices now, I guess offers a lot of opportunities to bring about, evolution in the environmental reporting space. So providing that real-time accuracy and accessibility for information. Companies being able to implement the technologies can maximize the benefits that contribute to their overall environmental sustainability efforts.
With that sensor data, obviously we're collecting a lot more sheer volume of data and variety of environmental data. What challenges does this present itself for companies, and what can they do to combat that or to prepare themselves for being able to collect more environmental data than ever before?
Yeah, the challenges there are really broad because it's a multidisciplinary endeavour. People just instantly think air quality, real-time data collection, those sort of things. But it's more than just water and air. There's so many different types of aspects that people need to be monitoring everywhere from the traditional around, water quality, water volumes, air quality, dust, but also flora, fauna, noise, vibration, waste. So you've got that level of challenge. Then you've got the challenge of the different sources of these data. So you've got everything from people taking field readings to data coming from labs, from IoT devices, and then the frequency. So you've got everything from quarterly readings down to 1 second data. Everything goes into the mix. And I guess with the emergence of devices and IoT, that's really good. But a lot of the regulations or regulatory drivers come down to analysis data. So even though we do have the ability to collect things in real time, it's coming down to those manual readings, analysis coming back from the labs. I guess what I'm saying is that the systems need to be able to cater for the high frequency data, but also the low frequency data, those things that can be just as important as all of that real time data, if not more, to compliance and sustainability for a company. It is a massive jump. And then you layer on things like communications. So thinking about IoT and the rollout of that, a lot of these operations are quite remote. So then they're looking at, low orbit satellites and those sort of things. Then it comes down to cost. And then they start to throw their hands in the air and go, well, maybe we'll just keep, getting that data every month and that'll be okay. So definitely a lot of challenges in that area.
Yeah, you're right, Stu. I think the challenges are also that the more data people need to handle, the more challenging it becomes. But I think it steps right back to the basics of data quality and consistency around that, making sure that there's data quality assurance processes in place, to be able to invest in that big data. And then the other end of that is being able to put advanced analytics and machine learning over the top of that big data to actually make sense and leverage that information. Having said that, I started back with saying that good data means, good information at the other end.
We are seeing it in the mining industry where, say, there's the Internet of Things looking at sensors for maintaining equipment, and you've got autonomous vehicles. There's a lot of use cases for technology such as artificial intelligence and machine learning and that sort of space. But how are we seeing those technologies actually applied to environmental reporting?
I'm not sure we are a huge amount at this stage. I think there's definitely the promise, and a lot of companies who are investing in the big data platforms, the data lakes, the business intelligence tools, the models, they can definitely leverage the environmental data. And I guess that's why it's really important that however you're collecting it and managing it, it needs to be able to be accessible to the rest of the business to leverage those. For me, a lot of the industry, because the environmental space is probably not as well funded within an organisation, for me, I believe these things are lagging a little bit. People are simply just trying to do a good job of data management before being able to utilise it as an asset like that. But, you know, you definitely do see some people doing things around, you know, sort of dust plume analysis. Same thing with water, especially upstream, downstream. If we do this sort of thing, what effect does it have? If we're going to see these wind conditions, what is the likelihood of some sort of non-compliance? So for me, that's probably the areas that are looking at immediate impacts of the environment, considering other factors, is probably an area that that people have been looking into.
Yeah, I think there is some work going on. I don't think it's large scale at the moment, but I think what we're seeing is incremental improvements in the technology to get us more towards being able to utilize AI and the, you know, machine learning algorithms. There seems to be a large focus on the technology on the ground, so that, you know, that smart monitoring and sensor networks, I think, to be able to be robust enough to collect that data in real time and being able to feed that back into the model. So yeah, there's, I guess, lots of different parts to the picture of how do you manage that data, and it's not just environmental data, it's right across businesses and what they're doing with all of their data. They tend to be now wanting to put all of their data in data lakes and data stores and warehouses to be able to put other systems and analytics over the top of that to be able to utilize the data in a more holistic fashion.
I think it's a good point, Shay. I think that we are looking at those incremental improvements, and we can't forget sometimes some of those can have pretty big downstream effects with the data management. I think Shay also mentioned before around that discipline around how we manage data and giving them better tools for that. Even things where, you know, loading data that the system learns from previous mistakes so those mistakes don't happen again. For me, that's really important, machine learning, because then that reduces the friction of getting data and the manual handling of data into the system. Given that these people are having to deal with such a broad variety of data, the more you can make that data governance, you know, more seamless and more efficient, absolutely the better. You're making better decisions, consistent decisions. The machine is helping with that. And I think there's a lot of value to even sometimes focus on those small improvements in pure data management.
So it's more to do with the small incremental improvements rather than the big on-ground changes, like you said. Now, with environmental reporting, if we take a look at, say, the climate reporting, Australia's actually introduced some mandatory climate reporting starting in July this year. This sort of reporting isn't new. It simply brings Australia in line with the international approach to climate-related financial risks and opportunities. In terms of ESG reporting, you said that might sit on the CFO's desk more than on environmental advisors at this point. But do you have any ideas as to why Australia has been kind of behind in this area or a laggard in this area, and what kind of steps companies can do now to not only get up to speed with new reporting standards, but also to make sure that their data is governed correctly and managed correctly?
It's an interesting question. I think we've seen it in sort of adjacent areas in Australia as well. So things like GIS, spatial data management, has always been lagging. Sort of natural resources management follows in the same path. So whether it's isolation, whether it's that lack of funding, I'm not really sure. Maybe it's our lackadaisical Australian nature that it'll be right. Who knows? But you know, generally, I think when companies' data is in good shape, that's really putting them in a good space to be able to leverage this sort of thing. You know, we've always found, and if you have a look at those mandatory climate reporting, you know, everything to get ready for that is just get your data organized, make sure you can sort of track back, you know, why and where it is. All of those sort of things of good data management are no less important when it comes to preparing and getting ready for this sort of thing. Those that have been relying on that manual management using SharePoint and Excel, you know, they lack that data chain of custody. They really lack the consistency in data classification and calculation, and that is really going to be the cornerstones for these frameworks. If they can't show that, if they show, you know, really, you know, differences in methodologies and for no real reason, you know, they're, I guess, the companies that are going to find themselves behind. So those ones that have been doing this sort of thing for a while, I don't think we'll find too much of an issue to transition into the new climate reporting.
Yeah, and I think you're right there, Stu, at a macro level, you know, developing and implementing regulations in Australia is very heavily influenced by sort of political and economic considerations. So I think there can be some hesitation around the economic impacts of that. If you take, you know, our dependence on fossil fuels, for example, you know, particularly coal and natural gas, the industries might be seen to be resisting or delaying the adoption of the stringent standards because of that potential economic impact. And I guess there's, you know, also comparing at the global level and pressures around that, concerns around being competitive on the global stage. And, you know, the reluctance again can be seen as overburdening our businesses compared to the sort of global counterparts.
Which is ironic because Australia is such a global powerhouse when it comes to mining and natural resources too. So I think there's also that cultural aspect as well that comes into it.
Do you expect reporting requirements to get more stringent over time? You say it's an overburdening of our companies, but do you expect this to be like a pendulum effect where the reporting requirements get quite stringent and then start to lax a little bit in the future? How do you see that environmental management reporting kind of heading in the future?
I think it has been heading this way for a long time. Anecdotally, we talk to customers and they'd say, look, you know, 5-7 years ago, you know, you get someone out on site looking at compliance and go, oh, look, this isn't great. Next time I come back, make sure that's okay. Whereas now it's a fine, it's immediate in terms of, you know, non-compliance reporting. So I think we've definitely been tightening up over the last few years. We've seen that in the adoption of what we've been doing, the emergence of being able to track compliance obligations, those sort of things is definitely becoming a lot more popular, for want of a better word. So we're seeing demand on that areas of our products, for example, to be able to track those things. And I guess that ties in, like you said, with the emergence of ESG. We've seen these things come through as fads before, but I think everyone gets a sense this thing's here to stay, along with all the reporting and the like that are coming through as well.
You know, and I think there's parallel activity between business strategy and, you know, government regulation and policy. You know, whilst that is, you know, becoming more stringent and tighter from a regulatory perspective, companies are also, you know, making moves around, you know, seeing it not just as compliance requirement around that, but more of a strategic initiative to, you know, to navigate the challenges and opportunities presented. You know, being proactive and transparent around that reporting can certainly enhance a company's resilience and contribute more to their, you know, social standing. We're seeing, you know, scores being attributed to companies for their ESG ratings. You know, you certainly see in S&P, there's data related to that you can pull back from particular companies. And I guess that there's much more insight into that and around what companies are doing now. So, yeah, it's definitely part of their overall business strategy.
I know we've spoken a lot about natural resources, the natural resources sector in particular, but are you seeing this sort of change happening in other industries? So the climate reporting isn't just for the mining sector, it is across all sectors of business. How are you seeing that sort of impact other industries, or are you seeing much of an impact in terms of environmental reporting?
Yeah, I think so. Like Shay said, yeah, you sort of see that when you are analysing any sort of company these days. Definitely is coming through. I guess it's more prevalent in mining because it has such a large impact in communities on the environment, but no less so than things like construction. So we deal a bit with the water utilities. So obviously they have a fair bit around environmental performance and impact on community and those sort of things. Social is a big part of these sort of frameworks as well when we're looking at that, but more around the climate change. I guess if the whole chain isn't looking at it, then if only one sector is, then it's not going to probably be able to deliver what we're all looking for as a community. So I think there is definitely, hopefully, a more of a global acceptance right across that everyone needs to be looking at this, from, you know, government departments through to software companies like ourselves, that we all have a part to play in looking at and achieving climate reporting targets.
I know we've mentioned a few questions now that are specific to Australia and climate reporting. Do you expect these sorts of reporting challenges to be happening in other countries as well, or whether that's now or in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a global challenge. We go to conferences, not just in Australia, but around the world. It is always a pretty key theme. Even in Australia, you'll see international speakers talking about it, that, you know, the really large companies that have global footprints, it is, you know, the number one thing as a company that they'll be focusing on, especially outwardly. Like I said, if just Australia focuses on it, it's probably not going to have a massive impact. Ensuring that everyone, you know, can head in that same direction is the only way really we're going to have success in that area.
Yeah, you're right, Stuart. I think, you know, the global initiatives such as, you know, the Paris Agreement, that agreement creates a framework for countries to collectively address climate change. So, yeah, there's lots of countries making those commitments to achieve net zero emissions and other ambitious goals around climate change. And that also facilitates, you know, more transparency into financial reporting. Yeah, the international standards and frameworks in place are important in understanding global activity around climate change. So, you know, they're gaining more widespread acceptance, and yeah, certainly more countries are open to adopting these standards with increasing pressures on countries to follow suit with, you know, being consistent and being able to compare between countries around those goals.
Why do you see things like an environmental data management solution as a key investment when it comes to these sort of regulatory reporting requirements and particular climate frameworks that are in place?
Well, I think this only works if you do have something which you can show your workings, show the evidence, not just the data, but the context around it. As I mentioned before, because of the sheer number of activities that need to be happening to meet the obligations, if you don't know or can't plan for what's happening, if you can't track, if all those activities are even happening in the first place, that's the first step of the compliance. Then you can work out what the data is telling you and move on from there. So that's one part of the puzzle. And I guess that is hard to do from a human point of view. That does rely a lot on the human if you're not using a good bit of software. So they might have a nice system together, cobbling together, as I mentioned before, SharePoint, Excel, those sort of things. But if they move on, then the next person comes in, will do it slightly differently, start a new thing, you know, show me an Excel spreadsheet, I'll show you an error in a formula. All those sort of things really opens a company up to a lot of risk in this area. Getting a software like ours then allows you to go across that whole chain. So really that plan, do, check and act really does align quite nicely to why we're trying to do a lot of these compliance and, you know, sort of risk analysis. So making sure we know the context of why we're doing where we're doing and how often we're meant to be doing all this. Look at, you know, did we get all these things in? If we got it, was it telling us? And then really importantly, what do we do? Where does this need to go? Which stakeholders need the data? How to respond to things that we might be detecting, events or non-compliances and those sort of things as well. It's a holistic solution. It can't be just something that focuses on one thing. It needs to be able to do that broad variety of functionality. And as I mentioned earlier, right across, you know, all those different broad aspects, all those different ways of collecting data, all those different frequencies. You can imagine trying to do that manually without a system in something quite rudimentary. It is quite a nightmare. Throwing on top, you've got these environmental professionals who are very passionate but often under-resourced and underfunded, trying to, you know, not knowing what they know, they don't know what they don't know sort of thing. So for me, it is paramount. But before that, having a really good plan, a knowledge of their frameworks and what they need to be reporting, a good understanding of all those drivers is pretty critical as well.
Yeah, and I guess for me, you know, having an environmental data management solution is a really valuable tool for companies wanting to do environmental management better. And it's really simple, I guess, in that the solution in itself is really simply, you know, collecting, managing and reporting on that data in more of a systematic and efficient manner. So really it underpins a really good management. You know, and it feeds into good governance, you know, the business strategy, risk management, and simply looking at metrics and targets for the company and feeding that data into corporate level objectives. Yeah, so I think it stems back to simplicity of being able to manage that data better.
That's interesting. I liked hearing about as people change in the business, the impact that that can have on something like reporting, it is an interesting factor. Now, In terms of Envirosys as an environmental data management solution, how has that technology actually evolved to keep up with reporting changes over time?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I guess the answer is both not much and a lot. So the core of the management of the data hasn't really changed a lot because of the ability that you need to be able to bring in so many different things. Where it has really changed is around that tracking of, you know, are we doing those activities? How does that link to compliance? Having that context in the system. And I guess, you know, as you sort of touched on earlier around these changes around the way that we manage this in, say, Australia, for example, it's been gaining momentum for the last 5 odd years, 6 years, as it has in the system. So we've been working pretty closely with our customers around what impacts them, what sort of, you know, stakeholder information do they need, what sort of reporting. You know, working quite closely with them with some of the regulatory reports they need to even spit out to the likes of, you know, Department of Health and those sort of things. So there's definitely a lot of those sort of cases now that we see more often that if we can help, you know, unlock the data they do have in the system. And this is why we have our little hashtag of no data left behind, because if you aren't bringing everything in, if you don't have that full context, then it's very difficult to do this job well. So I guess that's something we've been making sure we're not a glorified spreadsheet, that we are something that not only stores the data, but has that full context, gives them the tools to be able to interrogate it properly, share it with other people, other systems, but then also do that relevant and particular reporting that they need to do. It's really important, and it does make the lives of those people a lot easier.
So I have one last question for you guys in terms of the broader ESG environment. Do you think it is just a buzzword, or do you see it actually sticking around for a while in its current form?
Yeah, I think it isn't a buzzword because the E for most people is actually a D, being decarbonisation. That's just the feeling I get whenever you read an article or you go to a conference and those sort of things. And everybody is, and I'll say everybody, the, you know, really large mining customers are all making very public declarations around, you know, net zero and emission targets and challenging each other to be a lot better in the space. So I think it is here to stay. What it looks like, which frameworks actually emerge as winners, I'm not sure people really care too much, except for the fact that they are embracing ESG, the various parts of it. I think the S is probably something that has lagged a little bit, but we'll think we'll see the social side come out a lot as well. You know, we've got a bit of experience at Acquire, looking at you know, social intelligence as well, and it is something that is going to start coming in a lot to countries across the globe, and I think that's going to be hopefully a help, that sort of second wave of I guess these things do have waves. Everyone gets excited by it and gets a bit bored with it, and they can move on to something else. I think the fact that there's still a fair way to go, say the S side, will help that continue on as something, a bit of an emerging and long-lasting trend.
Yeah, it was interesting when we started life doing Envirosys, you know, obviously being quite environmental focused, there was a lot of talk around CSR, corporate social responsibility. There was a bit of a loose link between what we were doing and that, you know, and I guess that evolved to now in providing more tangibility around what we're doing and feeding into the E in ESG. So I think people can understand it a lot better. Our understanding of it has certainly grown a lot with working with our customers over a long period of time. You know, and I think the improvements that we've made around the system and the solutions that we've been delivering to customers and how they work with it, yeah, it's really exciting to be able to see, you know, the tangibility of that and how that's working for our customers to feed into the ESG. So in short, I think, you know, the answer is no, ESG is not going away. And I think because, you know, people can understand it a lot better, it's far more tangible.
Yes, you're right. ESG, the way it's structured at the moment, it's definitely easier for a lot of companies to kind of digest and understand, and also to understand the implications of not reporting correctly. Thank you so much for joining today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Acquire Connected. If you enjoyed today's episode, please like, share, and subscribe on your podcast player.
Thanks for listening to the Acquire Connected podcast channel. Find us at acquire.com.au.